I'm pulling out of the driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to have the drive to work. Okay, so today, and for the next few podcasts, I'm going to be going through Lorwyn, doing a card-by-card podcast. We're going to talk about different cards from the set of Lorwyn. So we're going to start with a Johnny Goldmane. So two white-white. It's obviously a Planeswalker, now a legendary Planeswalker. At the time, it would have just said Planeswalker. A Johnny. So he has a loyalty of 4, and he has 3 abilities. His first plus one, his plus one ability is you gain 2 life. His minus one ability is put a plus one counter on each creature you control. Those creatures gain vigilance until end of turn. And his minus 6 ability is create a white avatar creature token. It has this creature's power and toughness are each equal to your life total. So a couple things. So we had originally planned to make the Planeswalkers, or make some of them in Future Sight, and then they were going to show up for the first time not in Future Sight, in Lorwyn. But we weren't happy with them. We ended up pushing them back, so they ended up premiering in Lorwyn. So we ended up making 5 Planeswalkers in Lorwyn, what is now known as the Lorwyn 5, which would be Ajani, Jace, Liliana, Chandra, and Garrick. Yeah, the interesting thing on Ajani was, Ajani out of the gate was actually the least popular of the 5. I think he slowly grew in popularity over time, and now Ajani actually is pretty well liked. I think my best guess is that the other 4 were sort of all human, and Ajani was just a little different, and it was a little disconcerting at first. The thing we try to do with Planeswalkers in this set, since it's the first time you've ever seen them, is make them very typically their color. And this was really, really early in Planeswalker design, so we weren't... Later on, we got a lot more focused on who is this character and what do they represent, and we want a suite of powers that really hits who they are, where this particular, the first incarnation is a little bit more, let's make a typical white Planeswalker. Now, one of the things about Ajani is a healer. A lot of people don't know that about Ajani, which is where the life gain come from. The thing we always liked about Ajani, and this was true from the very early parts of Ajani, is the idea that he wants to work with others, that he is at his best with lots of others around him. Now, that slowly, the current version of Ajani that we sort of came to is that his abilities help others and not himself. That he can't boost himself, he only helps others. And that his abilities are all about, you know, from a story standpoint, he is more powerful when working with others because his abilities work on others. His magic enhances others, not himself. And you can see that in his second ability. His third ability, the avatar making ability, is, I mean, there's some synergy there from a design standpoint in that the first ability gives you life and the last ability, the ultimate, allows you to make a creature based on your life total, so those are synergistic with each other. And if you make the avatar, you can then, assuming you still have loyalty to keep him around, you can then give yourself more life to make the avatar bigger. But the avatar is not particularly a Johnny. Like, the middle ability really is the more defining. I mean, life gain is fine, he's a healer. But the middle ability that's helping your creatures is a little more where a Johnny actually ended up. So it's interesting to see the original version of it. Okay, next. So let's talk about a Moboy Changeling. So it's 1 and a blue for a shapeshifter. It's 1/1. So it's a changeling. Changeling means this card is every creature type. And you can tap target creature, gains all creature types, or tap target creature, loses all creature types. So Lorwyn had a strong tribal theme to it. And so part of having a tribal theme is... making it such that tribes, that there's some flexibility with tribes. And so, as I explained when I talked all about Lorwyn the set, Changeling was kind of our glue, our tribal glue to make that stuff work. One of the things we like to do when we do that is having cards that sort of manipulate the things. So this is a good example where this card says, I can make anything into a Changeling or make anything not a Changeling, essentially. I can control whether something is or isn't affected by tribal things. Now the interesting thing about this is notice that this creature affects anybody. I can affect me, I can affect you. These days, these kind of effects, A, we don't do them as much, and B, we tend to only affect your own stuff now. It's like, oh, I can enhance my own stuff, but we tend to do less of my stuff, keep your stuff from working. You know, we more of what we tend to do is enable you to help make your stuff work, but we've really toned down the I stop my opponent's stuff from working. We do a little bit of it, but we tend to do it more one-shot these days rather than someone that sits on the board and constantly does that. Because one of the things that's not fun is, oh, there's all these neat tribal synergies, and you get this out, and the opponent goes, oh, I can't do any of my tribal synergies. You know, the idea of things that just shut down inherently is the fun part of the set. It's something we have to be very careful about. And this card is the kind of card that we... Oh, one second. Sorry. That I don't think we'd make in this form today, that we wouldn't. I don't think it would affect... Probably it would just grant creature you control all creature types and wouldn't take away. Because I don't think we'd have take away the opponent's... And I don't... You taking away yours, I mean... I don't think there's a lot of play in that, so I don't know if we would do that. Okay, next. Aisling the Pilgrim. So Aisling the Pilgrim's one in a red. It's a legendary creature, an elemental shaman. It's a 1/1 creature. For a one in red, put a +1/+1 counter on Aisling the Pilgrim. If this is the third time the ability has resolved this turn, remove all +1/+1 counters from Aisling the Pilgrim, and it deals that much damage to each creature and each player. So the idea, so we had a bunch of elementals in the set. Elementals, I think, were based in red, but they actually showed up in all five colors. And one of the themes that we ran through the elementals is this three times thing, where if you use an ability three times in one turn, an activated ability, it would generate an additional ability. So the idea essentially is each of the small abilities does something, but if you do three in a turn, bigger thing. Now, this one is interesting, Aisling, in that what Aisling does is, if you do it three times, it kind of undoes, the idea is you can build up over time, and then when you want to, by being able to do it three times in a turn, you then get to turn all the counters into damage. So it kind of undoes it to a certain extent, but you also can build it up over many turns. One of the cool things is the creature can get bigger and bigger, and, you know, you can attack with it as a big creature, but then... Once you have six mana, you know, three colors and three red, or three generic and three red, you can then sort of convert all the counters into damage and use that as a means to kill a big creature or maybe finish off your opponent. Deals that much damage to each creature and each player. So it's like an earthquake that hits everything. Hits players and hits creatures. So the idea essentially, I guess, is you build up Aisling, and then when Aisling is potent enough and you have enough mana, you can just sort of explode. And this is a legendary creature. I know this. There's built some decks built around this creature, so it's definitely kind of fun. Okay. Next. Okay. Next is Battle Wand Oak. 2 and a green for a tree folk warrior. Whenever a forest enters the battlefield under your control, Battle Wand Oak is +2/+2 until end of turn. Whenever you cast a Tree Folk spell, Battle Wand Oak is +2/+2 until end of turn. So one of the things that we played around, Tree Folk was one of our creatures in this set. One of the things we played around with is the idea of Tree Folk caring about forests. They were base green anyway, and the idea of trees and tree, like, of course, a Tree Folk would like the forest. It's made up of trees. And so, note that this is pre-landfall. Landfall wouldn't come to Zendikar. So here's us messing around in landfall space prior to landfall existing. And so the idea we wanted is, we liked the idea of a tree folk that could come down relatively early and then keep getting buffs. The problem is most tree folk are a little more expensive, so we like the idea of forest trigger it and tree folk trigger it so that you can sort of trigger it every turn by playing land, and you can also trigger it when you start playing other land. But we thought the synergy there was kind of cool and was a neat flavor. The other thing that we did with this card is one of the things we were doing in Lorwyn was we had a little bit of a theme of pushing caring about basic lands to enable people who wanted to do some monocolor stuff to do some monocolor stuff. So for example, this card works pretty well in a mono green tree folk deck. One of the things we had done in this set with Tribal, I explained this in the podcast, but real quickly, is We try to make sure that all our tribes that we supported appeared in more than one color. There are 8 tribes that we supported. All of them appeared in at least 2 colors. Tree Folk, I think, was in 3 colors, and Elementals was in 5 colors. So we definitely sort of made it such that there was a bunch of things you could do with the creatures and give you a lot of different choices of how you want to build the deck. Because one of the things that we like to do in a tribal thing is allow you to build the decks in different ways. And one of the biggest ways to do that is to, is to give you options of how to build the deck by giving you color choices. And that, like, for example, Tree Folk, I think, were in green, black, and white, I think. So you can make a mono green deck, for example, using things like cards like this, or you can make green black or green white or green black white, or black white was kind of hard just because so many Tree Folk historically have been in green. Okay, next, Bogart Harbinger, 2 and a black creature, goblin shaman. When Bogart Harbinger enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a goblin card, reveal it, then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. So the Harbinger cycle, this was a cycle. I think whether we made 8 or 5. I think we made 5 Harbingers. I don't think there were Harbingers for all 8 tribes. I think there are Harbingers, I think, for 5 of the tribes. I think we rotated this through color. Could be wrong on that. That's my memory. Anyway, one of the things that we wanted to do is, look, there's a tribal theme. One of the concerns in general for Limited is making sure that you have enough of the theme to make it work. So the idea here is we put in a little bit of tutoring. Because we didn't want the card advantage, we put it on top of your library. So that essentially is, it's not that I'm drawing the card, but I'm choosing what my next draw is. We tend not to do as much tutoring these days. The main reason is there's a certain amount of replication of that things happen the same way time and time again if you always can tutor for things. One of the things we want to be very careful about is making sure that there's enough variety in how games play out. So we're more likely now, if we were going to do this cycle in a current set, we're more likely to look at top end cards of your library and then get the correct type, but let it go to your hand. So the idea is there would be some card advantage, but in order, for example, let's say we let you look at the top 5 or 6 cards. In order for you to find your tribe, we got to be playing a pretty heavy concentration of your tribe. So the weird thing about tutoring is it allows you sometimes to play actually less of the tribe, where look at top of library forces you to play more of it. So that, my friends, is good. Okay. Bogart Shenanigans, 2 and a red. Tribal Enchantment Goblin. Whenever another goblin you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may have Bogart Shenanigans deal 1 damage to target player or planeswalker. I'm reading you the Oracle text, by the way, and not, it did not reference planeswalker originally. It would have just said player, and then a planeswalker's demon. Well, this isn't, okay. Planeswalker showed up for the first time in this set, but at the time there was a planeswalker redirection rule, it didn't specify planeswalker. Anyway, so a couple things. One is this is a tribal enchantment goblin. So that's something we had done in this set where we were trying to make cards that weren't creature cards be of creature types so that we could care about them. And the idea being that if you had this tribal enchantment out, this goblin enchantment out, and you counted your goblins, well, guess what? It's a goblin. Or if you were regrowing a goblin, well, guess what? It's a goblin. And the idea was that it allowed you to interact with non-creatures. The problem, I've explained this in other places, but the problem with tribal in the big picture was it didn't matter enough, and it's kind of something either you commit to or you don't commit to. Like, okay, here's an enchantment that interacts with goblins. Okay, well, it's a goblin enchantment. Well, we make other enchantments to interact with goblins, we make other enchantments that are flavored very much to be goblin-y. Does every single, like, once we go down the path of caring, it makes us sort of care all the time and put a lot of words on cards. And what we found is there's just not a lot of effects that care. I mean, the only thing that matters is enchantments. Permanents are aided a little bit because you can count in play. If you're talking about, like, instants and sorceries, they can only be referenced when you cast them, if they're in your hand or if they're in your graveyard. And there's just a limited number of effects that care about those particular things. So it just didn't show up all that much. Okay, another thing this card is doing is trying to say... essentially what this card is there's a card... there's a card, what was it called? Goblin Bombardment. Gun Bombardment? From... I think it was Tempest, I think. Anyways, it's an enchantment that says whenever a creature dies, you get to do one damage to any target. And that card was very powerful. And so this card was sort of like, okay, let's do Goblin Bombardment, but just for goblins. And Goblin Bombardment costs one and a red. This costs two and a red. So obviously, Goblin Bombardment was a bit strong. So it's like, okay, well, we know Goblin Bombardment is strong. Let's remake it, make it just goblins. You know, be a little bit more expensive. But because it's focused just goblins... that makes it doesn't just go in any deck. It has to go in a dedicated goblin deck. So, allow us to make it without making it too much more expensive. Okay, next. Bridget, Hero of Kinsbale. Two white-white, legendary creature, Kithkin Archer. First strike, as a 2/3 creature, first strike. Tap, Bridget, Hero of Kithbane, deals two damage to each attacking and blocking creature target player controls. So, I assume... I don't have the... art in front of me. My guess is this is an archer. So this is... Bridget has the ability we call range strike, which is the idea that it does damage to things that are attacking or blocking. Back in the day, we used to do this as an activated ability. So the idea usually went on an archer or somebody with a ranged weapon. And the idea essentially is that it can interact with things in combat. We still do these effects on instance... usually not a common, well, sometimes a common, but we tend to do it as a one-shot surprise thing, not as a sitting on the board. The problem is when it sits on the board, it's really shuts down. It really, really, like this card in particular, okay, so for no mana, anything can be hard, two damage can go to any attacking or blocking creature, which means pretty much it's going to kill something that I guess in combat. So, you know, if you attack with a 1/1, I need a block with a 4/4 before I'm safe from this card. And so this thing was really board complex and very, I mean, given it, I'm pretty sure this is a rare, it's a legendary. But, you know, it really was, we tend to move away from this. I mean, I guess if ever we're going to do it on a legendary creature at rare is where we do it nowadays. So that is this. Anyway, It's interesting when I look back at designs. Like, I like the flavor of this. Obviously, it has first strike. It has range strike. I will bet my bow that this thing is an archer. Oh, it says archer. It says Kithkin archer. I know it's an archer. It says archer in its type line. I mean, the mechanically, it's flavored like an archer. I like that part of it. But it's just the kind of card we don't do as much anymore. That's a lot of my themes today is how design has changed. Okay, Brian Stoutarm. Two red white. It's a legendary creature, a giant warrior. He's a 4/4. He's got lifelink. And red and tap, sacrifice another creature. Brian Stoutarm deals damage equal to the sacrificed creature's power to target player or planeswalker. Once again, it just said player originally. So the idea essentially is it's a 4/4 lifelinker, and it can throw things to deal damage with them to players. Yeah, one of the things we like to do, I think the first one we ever did was Fling. Was Fling Tempest? Fling is a spell where you sacrifice a creature and then do damage equal to its power to target player. So this is flinging things, basically. So the thing we liked about Fling is the flavor of I throw something, and then because its power kind of is indicative of its mass, like it talks about how much damage it does. Well, if I throw a little thing at you, it's not going to do that much damage. I throw a giant thing at you, it's going to do a lot of damage. It's heavy. And this card, a lot of times when we make gold cards, the idea is, can we make something that, you know, sort of takes the two abilities and combines them in a fun way? So one of the neat things about this is it's a giant. Giants were basically in red and white. I think there might have been a few green giants. But basically, we wanted to put a fling on a giant because it's fun. A giant throws things. But that's red. That's a red ability. What's the cool white thing we can do? Well, lifelink, which is a base white ability, is cool because it does damage. And lifelink just cares about damage dealt by the creature. So when this creature deals damage by throwing a creature, you also gain life off that. So there's synergy there, and that's kind of cool. Okay. Cairn Wanderer. 4 and a black for a shapeshifter. 4/4 shapeshifter. So 5 mana total. 4 generic, 1 black. It's got changeling. And as long as a creature card with flying is in a graveyard, Cairn Wanderer is flying. The same is true for Fear, First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Landwalk, Lifelink, Protection, Reach, Trample, Shroud, and Vigilance. Okay, a couple things. First off, why do we make a list? Why do we list these things here? And the reason is that we can't, the rules can't, there's no way to just say keyword abilities. The game does not do well with that. And so in order to make it work, you literally have to list what abilities you are. So one of the things about these cards, which is interesting, is they show you the keywords of the time. So for example, we gave this, every evergreen keyword we had, we put on this thing. And so you can see, oh, you know, instead of menace right now, there's fear. Because at the time, there was fear. Fear was can't be blocked by black or artifact creatures. I'm sorry, can only be blocked by fear and artifact creatures. Then we became Intimidate. Intimidate can only be blocked by creatures of the same color and artifact creatures, kind of fixed fear. And then eventually went to Menace, which is just must be blocked by 2 or more creatures. You see Protection's here. You see Shroud is here instead of Hexproof. So you see a bunch of sort of different things that at the time, this is what they were. The idea that we like this a lot is that this is a creature. The flavor was this was a creature that had the creatures of the dead. And it looked at all graveyards because the idea is if any flying creature is dead, it now gains flying. I like making these kind of cards. One of the things that is fun is the changelings were already shapeshifters, and this is a very shapeshifter-like ability, so it's kind of fun that we could. Like, one of the things I was doing making changelings is trying to find things that want to be shapeshifters because already they're shapeshifters. And that was, you know, that was kind of cool. I'm piggybacking on the fact that they're shapeshifters already. And I just like the idea. We hadn't done that card before. I've made a lot of these kind of cards. I'm big on look somewhere and then has the abilities of the places it's looking. So this time it was at the graveyard. You'll see others on the handiwork and like one of the Simic cards, you know, against abilities of things that anyway, there's lots of other. This ability you can use in different ways where you kind of look and copy things. Normally the copying things isn't in black, but because we were looking at graveyard, we were able to put it in black. This ability usually, copying abilities usually isn't a black thing, but the flavor of doing dead things felt super black, so we put it here. Caterwauling Boggart, 3 and a red. So it's a Goblin Shaman, 2/2. Goblins you control and elementals you control have menace. At the time this was written out, menace wasn't a keyword yet. So there was a card, what was the card? It was Goblin War Drums, was in Fallen Empires, I think. That's the first time Menace appeared. Obviously, it wasn't called Menace yet. But we liked the ability, and one of the reasons that Menace eventually became keyworded is that we kept making cards like this that just had the ability. One of the things we always like about Menace is that it, the problem we had with Intimidate and Fear was, if you had a certain deck combination, you just couldn't block the creature. It was just unblockable. Oh, I can only be blocked by black and artifact creatures? I don't have black creatures. I'm not playing black, and maybe I have one artifact creature in my deck. So, wow, I have a hard time blocking a creature. Intimidate was a little bit better, just because it widened a little bit. But in the end, it had the same basic problems as Fear. Menace is nice because Menace, look, maybe I can't block you if I have one creature, but look, my deck's going to have more creatures, and, you know, I'm going to have ways to interact. Now I have to decide whether I want to attack, you know, I don't want to leave back 2 creatures for you. It just makes more interesting dynamic decisions. So Caterwauling Boggart does something interesting. You notice it says, goblins you control and elementals you control have menace. I don't know why it doesn't say goblins and elementals you control, but maybe there's some reason for that. I may assume there is. So one of the things we tried to do in this set, because we had 8 different creature types we were supporting, obviously we had changeling. The other thing we did is we did what we called crossover cards, where the idea was, oh, well, the flavor is the goblins and the elementals get along. So this card says, hey, you can have a deck of both goblins and elementals, because sometimes it's hard to have just one, or sometimes you just want to mix things up a little bit. Maybe early on I get a good goblin and I get a good elemental. Oh, if I take this card, now I can maybe play a deck where I can branch between goblins and elementals. Or maybe I can play a goblin deck and splash a few elementals, or play an elemental deck and splash a few goblins. It just allowed you, once again, to mix and match sort of what you could do. Okay, Shonda Nalar. 3 red, loyalty 6. So she has 3 abilities. She's a legendary planeswalker, Shonda, obviously. Her +1 ability is Shonda Nalar deals 1 damage to target player or planeswalker. Once again, this card, when printed, wasn't legendary. It only dealt damage to players. Anyway, I'm not going to keep repeating myself, but I'm reading the up-to-date text, obviously. Second ability is -X. Shonda Nalar does X damage to target creature. And then -8 is her ultimate. Shonda Nalar deals 10 damage to target player or planeswalker and each creature that player or planeswalker controls. So once again, Shonda was made very much as a base red planeswalker. The good thing here is Chandra's shtick basically is she's a pyromancer. She deals a lot of damage. There's a few other things we had her do, but like Ajani, as I said, wasn't his middle ability was pretty Ajani. This is Chandra up and down. We knew she was a pyromancer, and so pyromancy. One of the nice things about pyromancy is it works really well with direct damage, and red is all about direct damage. So this card basically said, okay, the +1 is just hitting players for a small amount. The middle, this is obviously the introduction of planeswalkers, but it's also the introduction of a -X loyalty ability. So the idea is that you can spend as much loyalty as you want. She starts with 6 loyalty, so you have the ability right off the bat to sort of do a bunch of damage, but you have to decide whether you want to get to her ultimate or not. If you start using her middle ability, it becomes trickier to get to the ultimate, and the ultimate is pretty explosive and, you know, is game-changing of an ultimate. So you kind of got to figure out, are you using her more as a means to sort of get rid of things in the short term, or building towards something in the long term? Okay. Changeling Hero. Okay, so Changeling Hero is 4 and a white. It's a shape-shifting creature, 4/4. It's got Changeling, which means it can be the card's any type, and it's got Champion, a creature. When this enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless you exile another creature you control. When this leaves the battlefield, that card returns to the battlefield, and it's got lifelink. So it's a 4/4 lifelinker. So it's 5 mana for a 4/4 lifelinker. Most champion cards champion a particular creature type. But on changeling creatures, we let it champion anything, because changelings are everything, is the idea. So if changeling goes on a goblin, well, then it champions a goblin. As I explained in my podcast on Lorwyn, champion was our idea of trying to do evolution. I don't think it was the greatest execution of evolution, but I don't know. It was definitely... it played decently. I don't think it had the... It didn't convey its flavor as well as we wanted, and so it's kind of a miss for me. It was not as popular with the players as I would hope. But part of that, I think, is the flavor of the creature turning into that creature. I don't know. Yeah, it ended up... Our inspiration and where it ended up were very different. Like, it did not have the flavor that we had started with, and I think that had some impact on how people perceived it. Cloud Goat Ranger. 3 white for a giant warrior. 3/3. When Cloud Goat Ranger enters the battlefield, create 3 1/1 white Kithkin soldier tokens. Tap 3 untapped Kithkin you control. Cloud Goat Ranger gets +2/+0 and gains flying until end of turn. So the idea is, I talked about a moment ago, a card that crossed over to goblins and elementals. This is a card that crossovers Kithkin and giants. Now, one of the interesting things about this card is its Kithkin interaction gets built in, meaning if I'm playing a giant deck, I can just play this card. Now, the 3 Kithkins I make, I need to save to power up my Cloud Guard Ranger to make him fly. But if I'm playing him with other Kithkin, or if I'm playing a Kithkin deck, I might throw this in my Kithkin deck. That allows me to use whatever Kithkin I want to make him fly. So this was neat in that it was a card that you could put in your giant deck, or you could put in your Kithkin deck, or might encourage you to play giants in Kithkin. Okay, next. Kolfinor's Plans. 2 black, enchantment. When Kolfinor's Plans enter the battlefield, exile the top 7 cards of your library face down. You may look at and play cards exiled with Kolfinder's plans. Skip your draw step. You can't cast more than one spell each turn. So the idea here is we're playing around this base, something that black does, where we give you access to something, but then give you restriction that later could harm you. And so the idea here is, essentially what this card is saying is, I'm going to let you draw 7 cards. But, that's it. You don't get to draw any more cards. And you to keep you from sort of spilling them out all at once, to avoid this being an instant combo win card, you have to dole them out over time. So that's not, for 4 mana, I get to draw 7 cards. But I'm taking on 2 big negatives, which is I don't get more cards, and I only get to get cast 1 spell a turn. Can I make a deck? This is a Johnny card. It's a little bit of spike to it. The idea is, that for Johnny and Jenny, it's like, okay, what do I do? How do I build a deck that makes use of this? The reason it's a little bit of a spike card is there is a point in time where you're close enough to winning that getting the extra cards will help you win and close the game. But kind of know when to do that is tricky. Because if you do this card prematurely, it will lose the game for you. But if you do it at the right time, it can be the thing that wins the game for you. It's definitely one of those cards that I enjoy in that it definitely makes you think a lot about how you want to use it. Those are fun cards. Okay, Consuming Bonfire. Tribal Sorcery, 3 red, so 5 mana total, 2 which is red. Tribal Sorcery, Elemental, choose one. Consuming Bonfire deals 4 damage to target non-elemental creature, or Consuming Bonfire deals 7 damage to target treefolk creature. So this is a good example of, I love when we can take spells and make something that is only makeable in the set we're making. And this is a perfect example. Like, there are not a lot of sets that you could reprint this card for numerous. I mean, it's got tribal, which means we probably wouldn't print it now anyway. But, forgetting that part. Like, it has to be in a set that cares about that has elementals and treefolk. And ideally, wants to be in a set that's kind of tribal that cares about elements and treefolk. Although it doesn't have to be tribal, I guess. One of the things we tend to do in tribal sets that we like is making cards care about what creatures are in their restrictions, like sort of their targeting restrictions. And then it just makes things a little different. Like, the idea here is it's a direct damage spell that kills creatures. The cutesiness of it is, well, how do you... You can't use a fire to kill a creature made of flame. The flamekins, the elementals here were flamekins. The flamekins are made of flame. So you can't... You can't burn a creature made of fire. So the non-elemental... Like, once again, it made elemental creatures matter. This is one of Red's kill spells. And so, playing elementals means that one of your things is... you have some invulnerability against one of Red's main spells. Then the other ability, the treefolk one, is mostly what I would call trinket text. I mean, it's not completely trinket text in that they're treefolks and it matters. But it was done for flavor. I guess it's not completely trinket text. It's a little more than trinket text. But it was done for flavor. The idea is, well, if you can't burn elementals, wouldn't treefolk burn really well? They're made of wood, right? And so the idea was, we'll do extra damage to treefolk to imply that, hitting treefolk with fire is even more potent than normal. So the idea is like, you don't want to use this on elementals. Oh, you do want to use it on treefolk. And we take a card, like I said, every set's going to have cards. I mean, basically this card in the vacuum is do 4 damage to a creature. Boring. I mean, Magic needs cards like that. But I mean, it's nothing special about that. And all of a sudden it's like, just these little nuanced things about, it's fire and fire can hurt an elemental and really can hurt a tree folk, just gives the card a lot of flavor. And that one of the challenges of making Magic is that we want to, we're remaking the same game again and again. And we're tweaking it, and there's flux to the game. But look, there's always going to be a direct damage spell that kills creatures. In fact, many direct damage spells that kill creatures. When we can make something that just has extra flavor and feels more organic and just makes you smile when you read it for the first time, that's good design. That is something that is something you want to duplicate. Okay, Crib Swap. So Crib Swap is a tribal instant shapeshifter. It costs 2 and a white, so 3 mana total, 2 generic, 1 white. It's got Changeling, the the ability has Changeling. And exile target creature. Its controller creates a 1/1 colorless shapeshifter creature token with Changeling. Okay, so it does a couple things. One is it gets rid of a creature and replaces it with a 1/1. Now, that's the kind of card we make. Over the years, one of the interesting things is the big debate of who is supposed to shrink things into, make them like sort of generic 1/1s. For a long time, white was the color that did that. And we slowly moved the ability over to blue. We tend not to do it on instants in blue because we don't like it as a combat trick to kill things. Blue's more likely to do it either as a sorcery or as an enchantment. And the idea that blue is a transformational color that turns things into other things. And so, originally it was in white just because the idea of white makes you powerless and that felt right for white. But, the flavor of you transforming things into other things is super powerful and very flavorful. And so we decided to do that, in blue. So Crypt Swap, one of the things that we were playing around with in this set is making the kill spells feel a little less threatening. And the idea here is something you're sort of just being swapped with something else. Oh, the cool thing about this card is by making the thing it changes into a changeling, it allows some interesting interactions. If you want to, you can use this on your opponent just to get rid of their big creature and give them a small creature. But it also allows you to use it on your own creatures when you have tribal interactions that are important. Let's say I need to do a certain amount of damage and I need one more. Or let's say I need to sacrifice something. Or, you know, I need to have a certain creature type. You can use this on your own creature to essentially turn it into the creature you need, creature type you need, so that you can make use of that. And while mostly this was used as a removal spell, the fact that it doubled as a, it was a card in white that helped you deal with tribal interactions, you know, that was kind of a clever way to do that. And it was definitely sort of, you know, it was definitely fun. One other thing we did is it's a tribal card that's changeling, which means that any card that interacts with anything can interact with this card. Now, given it's a spell, there's less tribal things interact with spells, but where you could, you know, you could regrow it, you know, if you could get a certain creature type back and stuff like that. Okay, next, Cryptic Command. So one blue, so 4 mana total, 1 generic, 3 blue. It's an instant. It says choose 2. Counter target spell. Return target permit to its owner's hand. Tap all creatures your opponent controls. Draw a card. So the commands were the brainchild of Aaron Forsyth. Aaron was the lead designer of Lorwyn. Aaron has always been a big fan of spells that modal spells, spells that, you know, give you a choice of what you want to do. And we had done a bunch of charms at the time where it's like, here's 3 things, pick one. So Aaron's innovation is, what if we make, you know, a rare version and instead of 3 choose 1, it's 4 choose 2. The commands were pretty popular. None was as popular as Cryptic Command. Cryptic Command, I mean, it's just a very powerful card and very useful card. I mean, this card shows up in almost every format that can play the card. It is so useful in the flexibility. And the commands really show the power of flexibility. One of the things I've found in general when I deal with designers that are a little less experienced is people tend to under-evaluate the power of flexibility. That flexibility is there's a lot of power to it because it really gives you ability and a means to control. It gives you the ability to be flexible, really just makes things much more useful. And so, like one of the reasons that I think the commands ended up being particularly strong, especially this one, is I think we a little bit underestimated how powerful having the choices were. I mean, not that the card isn't powerful nonetheless, but I think we underestimated it a little bit. I mean, I think we thought the card was a little less powerful than it was and ended up being. So anyway, I thought that was cool. We do have time. Okay, well, I'm now at work. So I don't know how many podcasts this will be, but I will keep walking through the sets as long as there's fun stuff to talk about. Anyway, I'm now at work, so we all know what that means. I mean, this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to make magic. I'll see you guys next time.